All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. We've been putting the industry on our backs and our shoulders recently. I think Brendan was carrying too heavy a load recently with all the work he's been putting in here. Brendan, we're happy to have you back off some double shoulder surgery. How are you feeling after a kind of a crazy week for yourself?
Glad to have you here. I'm making it through it. That was my my first experience with something like that. And I have to say, it has encouraged me to never do something silly in the gym again. And that's what I did. It's kind of like when you're crypto trading and you get a little bit too hot-handed because you're winning too many trades. And then you get over-levered because you get so confident. And then you get burned by it for the first time. And you're like, don't think I'm going to do that again. I'm going to be a little bit more careful. Well, the same situation over here.
And it really reminds us to focus on the fundamentals. Yeah. Focus on the things that are long lasting, things that aren't, you know, whatever, get rich quick or get strong quick, but the slow and steady innovations, the slow and steady wins. And we've got a great guest on the show, not to talk about her weightlifting regimen, but really the backbone of this industry is policy and regulation and regulatory clarity, stuff that we haven't had in this industry since the beginning of the industry, whatever it was, you know, 15, 16 years ago. So I'm so excited for this episode with the Chief Policy Officer of Hedera, Nilmani Rubin. Welcome to the Crypto 101 podcast. And how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
You are very, very welcome. And we've got a lot to do. So we just want to jump in before we get into policy. And really, again, we had a guest the other week said for every line of policy that's written or removed in, you know, in the industry, it adds or subtracts like $1 billion of market cap. So the thing that this hedge fund manager pays attention to most is policy. And so, you know, you're here, you're going to be talking to us, but you've got an extensive background. You didn't just kind of come up overnight in the crypto world. You've worked and advised in DC for a long time. So give us a little bit of your background before we dive into crypto specific stuff.
Well, thanks for asking. I am a DC rat. I came to DC from Palo Alto in 1999, thought I'd be here for a couple of years, and it's been 26. And between that time, I worked at the Treasury Department, I worked at the White House, 8 years in the Senate, 4 years in the House of Representatives. I was a lobbyist. I worked in industry. So I've kind of done all of the different pieces of policy in DC that add up to crypto policy. Because I did global policy, because everything crypto is global. Mm-hmm. I did tech policy, which we are an emerging tech. And I did finance, which is really what connects us. It's kind of the financial space, the global fintech space. So between all of those parts, I had like kind of like what was like the natural lead into crypto policy. And I'm really happy to be here, especially now, because we are like literally in the green field of crypto policy, and it's ridiculously fun.
I want to jump straight into that. So like we've had, like I said, you know, a policy backdrop that has been horrifying for the industry because there has been no policy. It's kind of been the Wild West. Everybody's like, do we do it in America? Do we not? And the kind of the de facto answer for a lot of people was, we're just not going to test the waters in America. We're going to go to some of these other smaller, you know, international jurisdictions that do have some clear policy frameworks. And we're going to go there. So our lack of policy has really driven innovation in crypto offshore. And it's something that the current administration has noticed and really trying to make amends for. But you say we're here, we've got these, you know, green fields, this blank space. You know, what are those sort of main pillars that we're missing that we need?
Well, you're totally right about people moving abroad and thinking abroad. I was on a call this morning with someone in Hong Kong and who was saying, people are actually thinking about what to do now in the US. Mm. They were calling them constantly to figure out how to launch in Hong Kong. And they're like, now thinking about the US because these pillars are being established in the US. And that is a clear legislative and regulatory framework. Because as you mentioned, we had this Wild West. People were kind of doing what they needed to do. And you had a sheriff in the previous administration that was kind of making up rules as they go. And we didn't know how to comply. So now you have an administration that's clearly stated that they are focused on fraud and continuing fraud, and they want to see the established legitimate industry innovate and thrive. Mm-hmm. President Trump has said that he wants the United States to be the AI and crypto capital of the world, and they're, through what they can through the administration, have made it clear that they want to engage with industry. So you have the SEC doing a task force that's engaging. You have the CFTC also engaging. You have Treasury, you know, talking to industry. It's just radically different. But then the part that's super exciting, especially someone who like had spent time on the Hill, is this movement towards legislation. Because legislation is the continuity of government. You have a law, you know what it will be. It won't change in 4 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's harder to change unless the legislatures do somehow change the law. But it's just, it's more stable than executive orders in the administration. And now we have bills that are moving. You have the stablecoin bill moving through the Senate. And then, very excitingly, we have the Digital Asset Market Clarity Act that was introduced on May 28th, H.R. 3633. I just had it. So exciting.
She doesn't have notes, by the way, for people who are just watching this. This is all off the top of her head. If you're not watching us on YouTube, if you're not, we advise you to go to. She's got a great smile, too.
And so you have this bill moving forward, and it was a bill that they wrote, that they shared with the public for comment, that they've now introduced. They're having hearings this week on the bill. Both House Financial Services and House Ag are doing hearings on the bill, really bringing out the text. So it is like a fully consultative, transparent process. And it is massively exciting because it could put us back in a competitive landscape with the rest of the world.
Attention cigar enthusiasts. Today we're thrilled to introduce to you CigarBid, America's number one online cigar auction site. If you're looking for unbeatable deals on every type of cigar, listen up. At CigarBid, you have the power to set your own price, often scoring top quality cigars and accessories at prices much lower than retail. Others want you to believe they are always giving you their best deal, but at CigarBid, you get to decide the deal. It's the cigar site the rest of the industry does not want you to know about. Score deals at the best prices every single day. The live auctions are fast-paced and exciting, making every bid a thrilling experience. Check out Freefall to watch the prices drop in real time, or the Power Hour for our fastest-paced auctions. Cigar Bid has a text update, so you get notified when you're outbid and get exclusive deals right to you. And if bidding is not your thing, then no problem at all, because you can buy the cigars straight up at awesome low prices as well. So no matter what you're looking for, you'll find it at Cigar Bid. So if you're ready to enjoy the fun and the convenient way to purchase fine cigars at great prices online, visit cigarbid.com/crypto101. That's cigarbid.com/crypto101. Happy bidding. Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation while they collect dust? And credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With Gemini Credit Card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight into your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, or you're a faithful listener of the Crypto 101 podcast and love Bitcoin and other cryptos, visit the Gemini credit card website so it's easy for you to earn even more Bitcoin or crypto with their credit card. Again, visit Gemini.com/card today to learn more. Have you ever wanted to trade Bitcoin but haven't dared tried? With Plus 500 Futures, you can trade crypto without the hassle of opening a wallet. With just a few clicks, you can register and start practicing with their free and unlimited demo. See a trading opportunity? You'll be able to trade in just two clicks. Feel ready? You can move to real money with as little as $100 once your account is approved. And the great thing is that in addition to crypto, Plus 500 gives you access to a wide range of instruments like the S&P 500, NASDAQ, gas, and much more. Explore equity indices like energy, metals, Forex, and beyond. With a simple and intuitive platform, you can trade anytime, anywhere. Experience the fast, accessible futures trading you've been waiting for with Plus 500. With over 20 years of experience, Plus 500 is your gateway to the markets. Visit us.plus500.com to learn more. Trading in futures involves risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone. Not all applicants will qualify, and this is not personal financial advice. Plus 500, it's trading with a plus.
Yeah, what does that policy process look like? I mean, you guys are working behind the scenes, and I know like people think Schoolhouse Rock, right? They're like, oh, how a bill becomes a law, and there's this little, you know, it goes from the House, it goes to the Senate, then it goes to the president's desk, and he could veto it. But behind the scenes, there's folks like you. I think, again, I'm not calling you this. You called it yourself, a DC rat. Somebody who's just in there looking around, lobbying, talking to the senators, talking to the congressmen, you know, piecing things together. But, like, tell us a little bit about how the sausage is made so that, like, how do these things actually get to be voted on?
Ooh, the inside baseball.
The inside baseball. That's why we have you on the very coveted Crypto 101 spot, the flagship here.
So the advantage we all had in 2025 is there had been a bill before. There was the FIT 21 Act that had been moved through the House in the last Congress. And so anyone who cared about digital assets has that bill and has markups. Like, what do they like about the bill? What do they don't like about the bill and why? And they would talk to the people who are working on the bill about what they would want to say changed in the new version that was going to come out in 2025 that just came out. And that was the starting point. And so a lot of people were kind of flying blind this first half of this year because we didn't have the exact text that staff was working on, but we did at least have this reference piece. So people would talk to the staff that were driving the legislation, but also talking to members of the committee who maybe didn't have a strong hand, but would be able to influence the bill. And then talking to members, this was really important, talking to members that had concerns about FIT 21 mm-hmm. and really understanding, like, what were your concerns? How can we address it in this new bill? What might work for everyone? Because the goal for everybody is to get a bill that can get passed into law. And in order to do that, you need to build support in the House. But then when it goes over to the Senate, build support. And different members have different concerns and mm-hmm. different. And it's not always aligned to party allegiance. It's like it's literally like different individuals have different concerns and really understanding that. So there was a lot of that going on. And then with educational groups, people in the last 6 months have been doing, you know, just general education. Like, I mean, your podcast name is perfect, Crypto 101, but really like 101 sessions on the Hill, really trying to like teach staff about the industry in a way that was accessible. Because the problem with crypto is that we made up our whole language and then we complain that people don't understand what we're saying. So like really like speaking to them, code switching into like the English that normal people use and making sure that people understood what we wanted and why. And at least from a Hedera perspective, because we're naturally global, really sharing what's happening in the rest of the world and why they're choosing these different approaches to make sure that the U.S. was on the level, U.S. On a level playing field.
Yeah, you know, I'm curious to hear your experience in how you've seen sentiment shift so rapidly, because it almost seems like a fever dream with how much federal and state level support the crypto industry has gotten now. Because you think back a couple of years ago, and there might have been a few people who owned a lot of Bitcoin or a lot of altcoins here and there, and they were big advocates of it. But now it seems like, I mean, we're getting support from everywhere, from every level of government. We're getting it in the House, in the Senate. We're getting it in the White House. At a state level, we're getting crypto reserves and tax cuts. And like, what has that been like to just see that unravel right before your eyes?
I definitely have whiplash because I started a Hedera in August 2022 and things were really good on policy. Like it was everyone was interested in our industry. And then FTX, and it was like, boom. And then, you know, it was, we were the pariahs of policy. And yes, now it's great that we're back. It's there's definitely like stronger support. However, it is not all like unicorns and
fairy dust.
There's definitely like people with real concerns about the industry and wanting to see, you know, robust regulation, and then like kind of emerging concerns around meme coins that we need to be thoughtful in how we address. So it's definitely like not all going to be easy, but it's certainly better. It's certainly a lot better.
And, you know, the reason that I asked that is because I'm curious, you know, does this feel authentic to you? Or is this something that might just be a facade? Like, is this all going to shift under a new administration in potentially 4 years? Or is this different kinds of politicians that are actually genuine in what they believe for the crypto space?
I think it definitely could change if there was a new administration, because so much that's come out has been executive order and direction from the administration, because there's been like a massive amount of flexibility. So that's definitely something to be aware of. And I think that's why there's so much enthusiasm about the legislation, because we know we really need to nail this down. I do notice in talking to new members of Congress that there is definitely an openness that there wasn't with some of the members that retired.
Okay.
And maybe that's just like a basic understanding of technology. Some people have argued that it's just generational. You know, there's definitely a generational change in acceptance of crypto. I don't think it's fake. Like, I think that it's like really people have taken time to understand this new thing, and that is really, really good for us. When you see like the hearings, you'll see that like not every single member is won over, you know, when we see the hearings this week. So in a way that's good, that it's taking people a while to move, and they're moving with facts.
And that's good. It's like sometimes those trends that maybe take a little longer to unfold, they're actually real substantive trends, because they're really grokking this new asset class and this new technology, this new sort of security layer to the internet. Like, there's so many things that are packed into blockchain and crypto that have applications across every field, whether it's medical, financial, voting even. You could put votes on the blockchain. I mean, there's so many different implications for this having sort of a trustless ledger that could keep account of pretty much anything. And so I want to zoom in on how Hedera is really attacking this industry. Because in the past, we've spoken to Mance Harmon. We've spoken to Lehman Baird. These are two of the co-founders and leaders of Hedera, who built out Hashgraph and all such great things. And we're greatly appreciative that we get to round out the Hedera ecosystem with their global chief of policy. And we want to know, what are you focused on? Like, where does Hedera come in? Because I know Hedera just, there was a company called Canary Capital that announced they want to launch a Hedera or HBAR ETF. I know there's the proof of stake consensus mechanism that you guys utilize. So where are you really focused on to make sure that Hedera's interests are protected and propagated?
I have two tiers of interest.
Perfect.
And one is minimizing risk to the network. Mm-hmm. And then the second is regulatory change that enables the network to thrive. So they're, you know, one's defensive and one is offensive. We have a very small policy team. So it is just two of us. It's myself and my colleague Isadora Arredondo, who's based in Zurich. And so we have to ruthlessly prioritize. And we want to do work everywhere, but we cannot. So this year, I'm painfully saying no to travel, and I'm really focusing in on the U.S., and she's spending a lot of time on the U.S., the U.K. and EU. We would like to be doing more in the Middle East and Asia, where in Australia, where rules are being developed right now. But we try to keep a side eye on that through a bunch of trade associations and some consultants. And in the U.S., we also, in Europe, we also have consultants. So we're, when we think about, like, what is, like, the biggest risk, we think about, like, what do we need to do to protect our framework, which is unique. Like, one of the things about Hedera that's really special is that we have a governing council of up to 39 established entities. And we want to make sure that that's not misinterpreted as control, because they are not controlled by each other. They're all making decisions by themselves. You know, because we have members like Google and IBM and London School of Economics. They have their own interests. So it is a stable, but sometimes people get confused with that. Our nodes are permission nodes, are because our council members are responsible for running them. And we actually, that gives us a level of decentralization that's really special, because it's run by different industries and they're in different geographic locations. And some people would say, oh, well, that's not good because it's permissioned, but it's actually a strength, because we know where our nodes are. We're not, you know, sometimes with permissionless nodes that are decentralized, they actually might be clustered by one entity or in one location, but you just don't know because they're permissionless. But we know ours are spread and they're run by unique things. So for us, it's really ensuring that our model is taken into account in the different emerging regulations. The other piece of it is, you know, you touched on it, that this is beyond just financial, right? There's a lot of real world applications. And so we spend a lot of time talking to regulators to ensure that it's not DLT and crypto are not just looked through a financial lens, that you don't want to inadvertently block out use cases like tokenization of data that goes into an AI. You know, those are really, really important. And sometimes based on who's making what rule, people forget that there are these non-financial use cases. And then on the kind of the positive side, or the kind of the proactive side, is we spend a lot of time kind of in coordination with our marketing team on education, whether that's through events or thought leadership pieces. We just did a piece on decentralization through OMFIF, and a piece on interoperability in DeFi through the World Economic Forum. So really kind of messaging in a way that both people in business and in policy can kind of grasp the potential and understand what policies they have control over, that they can adjust to ensure kind of a wide range of solutions going forward.
You know, I think one of the cool things about the crypto space is that it is global in nature, and that's how it was intended to be. And, you know, one of the things about Hedera, you know, for the listeners out there, if you aren't familiar, you know, Hedera is a global network, and you all are actively involved in what I believe is pronounced the MiCA Crypto Alliance and the Global Blockchain Business Council as well. And so you deal with crypto on a very global scale, and you all are self-aware, like you want to be a part of this. What has been the single, I guess, latest cross-border challenge that's at the top of your mind right now?
Or the single biggest?
Yeah.
The biggest challenge right now is, I think, is the over-glorification of permissionless.
Mm. What do you mean by that?
That people think, oh, well, permission, or, you know, that you have some people promoting the idea that permissionless is the only way to have a decentralized network. And we want to make sure that people understand that there's nuances to it. Our network is permissionless in that anyone can build on it.
Yeah.
It's just not permissionless in terms of who can run a node.
And who could be the validator.
Yeah. And we have trusted entities being those validators. And so we're spending a lot of time educating people about how, like, our a system of decentralized permissioned nodes can be more robust than just a pure permissionless network, because we have this breath. And I think that just, it's like a knee jerk. The word permissionless sounds like nice, you know? Yeah, anyone can do whatever they
want. And different.
It sounds nice and different. But if you think about it, permissionless means like it literally could be clustered. Mm. It could be run by like a couple people, because no one needed permission to run it. And it could be in a country that's considered, you know, a national security threat or a bad actor.
So, we saw this with China, right? I mean, they cornered like over 50% of the Bitcoin mining market, and it wasn't necessarily like just China as a state level actor, but it was like all of these entities in China. And then you sort of back out and you realize, all right, well, if you're a company operating in China, China basically owns you. And so it was kind of like an issue. And like we see, like kind of the opposite with Hedera, which is interesting, is like, you know, you have all of these different competing interests that are also running a validator. And so, you know, there's no collusion going on sort of between all of these validators, which is always the risk, because if they were colluding, it would go kind of against that game theoretic sort of outcome where it's like, well, you're not going to be colluding with your direct competitor. But what if we all, as direct competitors, come to the playing field? We all have the rules of the game. We all sort of operate by this. And there, you know, you have a level of, you know, permissioned entry to that, but also decentralization. So, you know, it's heady stuff. And like getting Lehman or Mance on here to talk about like how they architected this just blew my mind. But it's really cool to see just the continued growth, the continued applications that are growing on here. But I want to hone into some of the stuff coming out of the SEC. I think it might have been last week or the weekend before. There was kind of, it flew under the radar, but like they, the SEC started talking about staking in the ETFs and how potentially there could be a path forward for that. Are you privy to any of the discussions going on with staking and the SEC?
We haven't been working with them on staking. I will say though, we are in the final hours of working on our RFI response. So
what is that? Your what?
Hester Pierce, who is a commissioner at the SEC, had written a blog. Where do we go from here? And in it, she had a long series of questions that she asked for response from the public. Mm. And we have worked on our response and plan to submit that in the next couple of days.
Is that going to be public? Is that going to be some... Oh, awesome. We'll definitely keep our notifications on.
So companies have anyone has the option to either submit it publicly or submit it privately just to staff. We're going to choose the public route.
Awesome. It seems like that's also kind of a lot, you know, that spirit kind of trickles throughout Hedera. I know there was a recent article where you donated some level of software to the Linux Foundation. Was it the entire code base or kind of what was that move?
Yeah, we transferred our code base to the Hero Project at the Linux Foundation, and that enables Hedera to be open source going forward.
Wow, that's pretty cool. What like went into that decision? What went into that decision, I guess?
I think it was a recognition of the maturity of the network and our desire to make sure we had continuity, and it was kind of finally time. I think it took years to get ready and to prepare for that decision. I do know that they looked at so many different partners to consider for moving our open source, and really valued the Linux Foundation and its ability to manage such a big project. So we're really, really excited to be working with them.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean,
you just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
After that, you know, kind of what do we have to look forward to here for Hedera? You know, that was a big jump. I know you guys are doing a lot with AI. I saw something in the news recently how Hedera is either already or working towards being quantum proof. What are some of the cutting edge stuff that you're seeing from the team?
I'm really excited about the AI piece because like AI is this challenge, right? Like, how do we deal with AI? How do we, you know, I've used AI and how to hallucinate. And,
yeah.
You know, I'm sure everyone else has. And
totally.
So what's really exciting about the types of products that are being built on Hedera, which include Climate GPT, Improve AI, it's that it allows you to tokenize the data that goes into the AI. So you know the provenance of the data. You can turn on and off the permissions of the data if you don't want it to be used anymore. You can do micropayments for the use of the data. So if it's copywritten material, you can pay someone for use of their data. And then you can pull it out if it's wrong or biased. And it's like, that is just a really exciting, clear use of this technology to make other emerging technologies even better. So I think that's very exciting.
I love it. It sounds like all that's going to be rolled up into HBAR. Like, you know, all these things that are sort of valuable are going to trickle back down to HBAR. Brennan and I were talking about the HBAR ETF. We've already kind of mentioned it here on the show already. But what do you guys, is there anything that you can do or are you doing to make this HBAR ETF, you know, come to fruition and be like a really comfortable spot for, you know, regulated institutional asset managers to sort of get altcoin exposure along with sort of this AI exposure? Or is that sort of stuff that you don't touch on?
I personally don't touch on the product piece, but we do work with regulators. So whether it's the Treasury Department or engaging, I did a roundtable at the Federal Reserve, or, you know, different regulators, just making sure that they understand the underlying technology and understand the ecosystem. And then recently, like, had meetings over at the OCC, but sharing kind of how we work so that they can have comfort with things that are built on Hedera. So we definitely do a lot of outreach to regulators. We also work with groups that are more in the traditional financial sector. Because I think in crypto, like, a lot of us just talk to other folks in crypto, and we don't realize, like, so much is moving forward in TradFi that is kind of similar or intersects with what we're doing. So we also engage with regulators through IIF, which is the Institute for International Finance. And whether that's like comments to the Financial Stability Board or to other global regulators, we really like work with with them and some of our other trades to ensure that the regulators have the information that they need to make a really solid decision.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. And yeah, you guys work a lot with different partners, not just in DC, but I saw Hyundai and Kia are also sort of leveraging the technology in order to, you know, push forward real world blockchain adoption in the automotive industry. Are there any other partners that you wanted to highlight that we haven't already touched on today that might, I don't know, might be something recognizable for the Crypto 101 listeners?
One thing that I think is really interesting is Red Swan, the real estate company.
Ooh.
And it allows their company allows like fractional ownership of real estate assets, and they've tokenized $5 billion in real estate, and they have over 13,000 investors.
Wow.
And like when I go downtown, and downtown DC is struggling right now. You know, post COVID, it hasn't recovered. Like there's just a lot of empty commercial space. And when you like look at companies like Red Swan, you see how it can really provide liquidity and lower the barriers to entry for people who want to go into commercial real estate. And and not just in the US, because they are operating in Africa, in the Middle East, kind of all over. But I just think really close to home, you can see like, oh, that's a really important use case.
Yeah. No, I mean, I love it. It's one of those things, fractionalized real estate. It really showcases one of the greatest parts about, you know, tokenized investing is that you no longer have to come up with, you know, $1 million to get real estate exposure. And especially as the prices are going to be going, you could get fractional real estate exposure. And so say I want to get, you know, put $100 or $1,000 to work in a very specific market, you could start to do that. And you know, before the, you know, advent of crypto and blockchain, it was just impossible, right? There was, so man, that yeah, real world assets, we could have a whole nother conversation on that too, because I want to bring on, you know, TiVo, make a note. One of the other people I want to bring on is somebody who's, you know, dialed in into like the mortgage business and like the real estate business, because apparently like real estate is one of the most heavily paperworked industry, and it's like it's just really, really, really difficult to scale that sort of tokenized stuff. So I think that, you know, a year or two from now, this is going to be no longer just a pipe dream, but like you said, like it's, you know, we're doing the legwork, we're tokenizing, you know, $5 billion of real estate, and that's just going to keep growing. But yeah, it'll be very cool to see how it plays out. And with the end goal of being able to get the everyday investor very specific real estate exposure, which is super cool, super passionate about it.
And it feels like every guest that we have, well, almost every guest, Bryce, comes on here in one way or another, this topic of tokenization and real world assets works its way into the conversation. And I think that goes the distance to really talk about what people are thinking, right? They're looking at this. And the cool thing is that it can be used so many different ways. You know, we were just talking about real estate, but it's nearly endless in its use case. You know, anything that we have is a real world asset, right? That is a literal term. Anything that we have here in the world, maybe it's watch, maybe it's art, maybe it's real estate, you know, maybe it is something that is already virtual. You know, it could be bonds. Like we have all these other things that we can tokenize, and we're just scratching the surface of it. So, you know, it is ironic, and I'm sure the listeners are realizing that as well. They go, man, you know, I'm hearing this topic, this genre inside of crypto come up a lot, and you'd be right.
Yeah, and also it's not just like us, like Scott Bessent, who's the Treasury Secretary, he's going on CNBC and Bloomberg. I've heard it like a couple times from him. He's like, you know, stable coins, right, are like the most, you know, real world asset thing because it's backed one-to-one for a dollar in the bank account or T-bills or whatever. So he was saying that right now there's about $300 billion worth of stable coins that they, you know, own an equivalent amount of, you know, U.S. treasuries and U.S. dollars. But kind of the undercurrent here with the whole market freakout is there's less sovereign, you know, less buyers of America's sovereign debt because of kind of our fiscal dysfunctions and all that kind of stuff. And so the idea is like if we have stable coins on shore, you know, exporting, you know, U.S. dollars all around the world super easily, they're going to be a huge buyer of U.S. debt and treasuries and bills and all that kind of stuff. to the tune of $2 trillion sort of in the near term. So I think the administration is definitely realizing, hey, like if we enable this technology, it's going to be better for everybody on many different levels. But before we let you go, a couple final questions, since we're on the topic of asset tokenization. I know you have, Hedera has an asset tokenization, a studio, I believe it was called. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is? And can any of our listeners, you know, go on that platform, or is that like enterprise only?
The Hedera Asset Tokenization Studio is available to everyone. And it's kind of like, I think of it as like Wix for websites. Like it's like the back end that allows you to just make tokenize your assets that you have. So it's, I might not be as technical as some of the others, so it might be a challenge for me, but I think for your listeners, it would definitely be doable, and I definitely encourage them to do it. But we also, in addition to the asset tokenization studio, we just launched an AI studio.
Oh.
So I would encourage your listeners to look at that. It is also an open source platform, and it helps people build intelligent applications, and it combines AI with Hedera's infrastructure.
That sounds awesome. Yeah, definitely. If we can swear off the drug that is, you know, ChatGPT and OpenAI, and they're harvesting all of our data, they're harvesting our eyeballs, they're doing everything. And if we could have more alternatives that are decentralized, that's awesome. So I'm really glad you guys are building that on some incredible infrastructure. And last question I have for you is just kind of like a softball, but like what would be your, number one word of advice to anybody who's listening to this podcast? They're new to crypto. They're overwhelmed by all this talk of decentralization and policy. And like, I'm just trying to figure out, if this is right for me. What's kind of, from an expert in the space, how would you kind of pair it for them?
I think that we're in the like early 90s. When the internet was emerging, the early 90s, I remember my high school yearbook was 1989, and this guy wrote, "The best way to reach me is on electronic mail." And I wrote it out, all these numbers. And we all laughed because we were like, oh, he has friends on a computer. and I think that's where we are with crypto. It's like, it's just new. It's kind of, but it's inevitable. Like, this is what's coming. These are the new rails going forward. So I totally understand the hesitancy of folks that are coming in. But to just be patient that this is going to be as just like you won't even notice it. Like, just like you don't think about how the internet works, you're not going to really think about anymore about how crypto works. It's just going to be like the normal rails that underlie, or DLT that underlie your life online. And with the policy work, what's really exciting is that there will be less uncertainty. There will be more comfort, and there'll be better rules for the companies to follow so that they know how to innovate and they can safely, so that they know, because companies want to follow rules. They don't want to do stuff that's illegal. They don't want their businesses in jeopardy. So that's really good. But it's also really good for consumer protection. Like, the rules that are being promulgated, provide that level of consumer protection. What we've seen in other countries is countries that had clear rules have just fared better in terms of consumer protection, like Japan, after their things have gone wrong and consumers were made whole because of the rules that they had. So so I think that this is maybe we were in the Wild West, but now we're moving forward, and we're coming into a space where there is going to be clear governance, and it's kind of more comforting for people to get involved in digital ledger technology.
Yeah, no, that's a great comparison. And even just on the policy front, it reminds me, of stories that I've read about the crypto wars of like 1999, back when the U.S. government was literally trying to ban encryption on the internet, and because they were scared of it. Oh, what happens if, you know, all of these encrypted private messages start getting sent around, then there's going to be an uprising against us and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, and so they, you know, labeled it military grade, you know, exports for encryption. And of course, now every time you log onto a website, it says HTTPS. Okay, that S, it might not seem like a lot, but it's changed the entire world, because it means that you could put credit card information online and not have somebody, you know, sniffing in on it and being able to track it. You could put your personal information and it's, you know, protected for the most part. Of course, there's data breaches at the centralized level of these different companies. But, you know, it's kind of the same theme that's been going on with, you know, crypto, you know, Redux 2.0 here with Bitcoin and blockchain. It's like it's now encryption for your money. Because you can't trust anybody just with your money, or it's encryption for other sorts of data that, you know. So it's just a really cool sort of analogy that you just drew there. And yeah, definitely encourage everybody to continue following along with Hedera and Nil Mini Rubin's journey, because this is awesome. We really hope to have you back on again soon. And before we let you go, do you have any, like, you know, places that people could follow along with your journey? Are you on X? Are you, you know, a Substack blogger? Like, where do people, like, you know, kind of get in touch with you?
I put a lot out on LinkedIn, so I'd love to have your followers follow me on LinkedIn. I put out pieces as well as our general Hedera LinkedIn profile, and then our general general company, the Hedera, also puts out stuff on X. I'm just not active on X because it's just too much.
too much. I totally feel you. LinkedIn's a good place to go. We really appreciate it. And those will be in the show notes for everybody, along with some other show notes. So check it out and come back same time, same place next week. We're going to have some more amazing guests for you here on the Crypto 101 podcast. Ms. Nil Mini Rubin, thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Thank you, Bryce and Brendan.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.